Good
Morning.
How's everyone doing today? Tell you what, there's a lot going on in Israel right now. I don't know if you've been watching the news out of Israel, but all kinds of rockets and stuff being fired between Hamas and different places in Israel. Mostly in the Gaza Strip area. All kinds of things going on. Kind of makes you wonder if it's biblical in nature. So let's start with a word of prayer. Oh, dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this time to look into your word and to, I guess, see what new things we can discover about upcoming events of the tribulation. And may you be with us and give us wisdom and knowledge to know, understand the reading. In Jesus' precious name, I pray. Amen. So, back to our picture here. We are in Revelation 12, and we're going to finish off the chapter, hopefully, today. It's taken on 6 through 17 here, and not quite as much detail as I did yesterday. As to, we'll continue with this is more like Israel future. So basically, this second part is more about the period of time, basically from the abomination of desolation, or the midpoint of Daniel's 70th week, to all the way to when they're being where they're being protected in Petra. It's my take on it. So according to our chart here, we're actually going to be just finishing up this particular picture here, where we had the woman that we talked about yesterday, and the dragon being the woman being Israel, getting ready to give birth to Jesus, and that this particular symbol has to do with a vision that Joseph had back in Genesis. Then we have the dragon who represents Satan. And this whole chapter, I think, is basically Satan and Israel. Their relationship going in the past and going into the future. And we got the seven crowns up here. That's five are gone and three are left. That actually, I found out a little bit more on that. That's basically, if you look back at Daniel's prophecies in chapter 2, up until Daniel's point, he had seen five different kingdoms coming about, and that talking about the one kingdom that he was in, and then two further kingdoms to come. And the two further kingdoms is basically the kingdom of the Antichrist, and then across the and then Jesus Christ's kingdom, the final kingdom. So the crowns kind of represent. So that's what it means by in that particular verse. It said that eight kingdoms, five are. Try to find that verse real quick. And there are another one in heaven and beheld a great red dragon having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns. So the seven heads have to do with the seven kingdoms. So it was four, and then one current, and then two future. That's what it was. Four were the Babylonian. The Egyptian, the Medo-Persia, and the Roman. So the next picture coming in out of, oh, let me finish up. And we see here that this is the David's throne, which I haven't got anybody in it yet, but Jesus is gonna, but it's set aside to be occupied by Jesus Christ in the future, and that'll be during the Millennium Kingdom. And you can see here in the corner here is that this is the verse we're going to come to here in a minute, verse 6, where I'll just bring it up. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared. prepared of God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. So this happens at the midpoint of the tribulation. And you can see here the woman is fleeing into the woman here being Israel again, on the bones of loss of death. And she's going to be fleeing into the wilderness. And I believe that based on a lot of other people's taking on this verse, that it's actually the city of Petra. It has some interesting verses having to do with it. For some reason, it's in the land of Moab, and for some reason the Antichrist isn't allowed to go there. And it's a very interesting verse. I forgot to grab it today, but I will at some point in our study. So the next thing we're going to talk about is the fact that Satan is going to be no longer allowed into heaven. And so that'll be starting in verse 7, going to verse 12. And a little bit more about this is that I'll get to that when we get to the verses. That's how to do it that way. But first, we'll talk about the midpoint. And let me jump right in here and start reading the verses. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And this, of course, is talked about. I believe this is the exact same thing they're talking about in Daniel 9:27, where Daniel was talking about the midpoint. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, 1 week being 7 years. And in the midst of that week, which is where we're at now, the 3.5 year mark, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of the abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. So we're at the 3.5 year mark, I believe, here at this particular verse. Again, chapter 12 is more of like a overview of Satan. So we haven't necessarily gotten to this in our timeline. Well, we have, yes. I believe we saw it at the fifth trumpet judgment. But this particular chapter 12 is more of just an overview of all the events that Satan is going to be involved with during the tribulation, and a little bit of a history lesson. Hope that makes sense. So again, this is the 3.5 year mark, and at over in 2 Thessalonians 2:3, it talks about it too. It says, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that shall not come except the coming of falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, which is the Antichrist, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." And this is why I brought this verse up. Was that verse there about that he sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God? That's what just happened, where the abomination of desolation, and now that the children of Israel are fleeing into the desert, as per instructions by the two witnesses and by Jesus himself in Matthew 24, which we're going to get to, and also, excuse me. So on to Matthew 24. This is Jesus himself talking. This is during the Olivet Discourse, and he's telling his disciples about things that are going to be happening during the tribulation. And this is the portion where he talks about this part. "Where ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet," I just read that to you, "stand in the holy place. Whoever readeth this, let him understand." Now, the holy place is the temple, the rebuilt temple that hasn't happened yet. But all the plans are ready. They are so ready to build that. It could happen anytime. that let them that which be in Judea flee into the mountains. This is what we're talking about right now. This is the Israel fleeing. This is Jesus warning them ahead of time. Let him which is on the housetops not come down to take anything out of their houses. So it was, get out of town now. Neither let him which is in the house turn back to take his clothes. So if you're at work, go straight out of town. And woe unto them that are with child and to them that give suck in those days. It's going to be a little more difficult with some small ones. But pray ye that your flight be not in winter, either on the Sabbath day. And this makes it very Jewish, too. Some people like to try to take this and turn it into something like, this definitely ain't happening in Kansas or in here in Arizona necessarily. Well, I guess it could. We have mountains here, but we have some wilderness. Typically, when you're talking about the Sabbath day, Jewish nation. For then shall it be great, in case you don't know, the reason for the Sabbath day is you can only walk like a half, you're only supposed to walk like a half a mile on the Sabbath day. So if you're still following the rules of the Sabbath, and that, and mostly the devout Orthodox Jews still follow all those rules, then you won't be able to flee into the wilderness. It'll be too far. For then shall be great tribulation, such as not since the beginning of the world to this time, or ever shall be. Except those days should be shortened, there shall be no flesh be saved, but for the elect, those days shall be shortened. Now, this upcoming time is going to be really, really bad. I mean, really bad. So, on to verse 7. Revelation 12:7. Now this is where we get into the war. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels. And we got to bring the picture back over here, and we can see we got that's a depiction of Michael. I'm gonna talk a little bit about Michael here in a minute, and then we got the dragon being tossed out of heaven. And we can see all of Michael's angels are up top here in the whitish area, fighting against all the dark angels down on the bottom here and being thrown out of heaven. And I want you to realize, though, that I think that this particular reference isn't necessarily, it's going back to a time frame in Revelation, I mean in Genesis, sometime between Genesis 1, 31 and Revelation, I mean Genesis 3:15 is when this officially happened. But realize that that Satan himself has been allowed into heaven to, and I'm going to show you a few of these verses, to complain about us and say, oh, look what Dana did down there. He ain't following all your rules, you know. And, so basically accusing the brethren day in and day out. So at this point in time, Satan is going to be thrown out of heaven permanently. Well, that's going to be making, you know, madder than all get out. Back to the verses. So Michael and his archangel fought against the dragon. The dragon fought against his angels. Now, I believe that actual, this might have happened. I think the and the dragon fought and his angels portion actually happened a long time ago. So again, this is a little bit more of a history aspect. I just wanted to bring in some verses about this. About dealing with Satan. And if you happen to be someone reading this and you're in the middle of this, just remember this verse here, Ephesians 6, 11 through 11 and 12. To put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. I was called to the Lord, and that with his power, he's able to stand off the devil. Don't try to do it yourself, but bring in the power of the Lord. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now I want to talk about Michael a little bit. Some other verses about Michael. Michael always seems to be on the warrior. He's like the soldier of heaven. And he's always defending Satan. And he's always fighting against Satan, having to, on behalf of Israel. Some other places we see Michael is in Daniel 10:13. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia, it's another term for Satan and his minions, withstood me 1 and 20 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. This is actually Gabriel talking to Daniel, and that he was delayed getting there because he was being held off by Satan. And also over in Daniel 12:1, at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of the people, and shall be a time of trouble such as never since was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time the people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. This is a prophecy about what we're talking about right now. Is it those that finally see the Messiah as who he truly is will be protected and written in the book. Also over in Jude 9. Yeah, Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring any him a railing accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee." This is another great verse to remember, that to not try to take on Satan by yourself. Always bring in the Lord. You'll hear terms like, "Get behind me, Satan," in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's the only way you can deal with demons. Don't try to think that you're going to be able to withstand them on your own. Use the power of the word against them. Let's talk about a little bit about Satan's demons. Some other verses that talk about that is over in Psalm 78:49. He cast upon them the fierceness of his anger, wrath, and indignation and trouble by sending evil angels among them. Also over in Matthew 25:41. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." I'm just bringing up some verses that talk about the fact that the devil has a group of angels that are on his side too. Also in 2 Peter 2:4. "For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment." I just brought these verses up as confirming that that Satan does have a group of angels on his, basically on his payroll, that agree with him, that work with him, and they're going to be cast into the lake of fire at some point. So Revelation 12:8. "And prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven." So this is again where Michael is throwing Satan out of heaven permanently. Revelation 12:9. "And the great dragon was cast out, an old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." So this is permanent. So this is why at this point in time is when the abomination of desolation happened. And Satan is fired up. The two witnesses are going to be killed. We have the incident there that the... they lie dead in the street for a few days. We'll be talking about them probably tomorrow. We get into that area. I think it's either tomorrow. I think it might be tomorrow. I think that's chapter 13. And then see, where am I? 12:9. This is a review. Again, I believe that this actually happened back in Genesis 3:15, where God himself put the curse on Satan, and that "and I will put enmity between thee and thy woman, and between thy seed and her seed. He shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." So this is where the bruise thy head is coming into play. And here shortly we're going to see in the upcoming verses that the Antichrist is actually going to get a deadly wound. We'll see that coming up. I think it's the next chapter. And it, this is where Satan is actually, where the fulfillment of this particular prophecy is going to happen. I just wanted to point out, too, that that even though I think that they were thrown out of heaven here, Satan has always had access to heaven. And so I just want to bring up a few verses in Job and Zechariah and Luke that show this. Job 1, 6 and 7. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also along with them. So this is in the throne room. The sons of God are angels, and they were coming to, talk to God the Father, and be present with them, let them basically giving updates as to what's going on the earth. And then Satan came along with them. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down it. So we can see here that Satan goes back and forth between heaven and earth. That's kind of like his thing. You see it also over in Job 2:2. And the Lord said unto Satan, from whence thou comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down it. So that it happened twice. It actually happened three times in Job. Also over in Zechariah 3:1, we have a reference to this. And he showed me Joshua, the high priest, standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. So it's another indication where Joshua was actually able to see the Lord in heaven, and Satan was standing there. Over in Luke 22:31 and 32, which is a kind of a funny verse. I've heard lots of cute jokes about it. The joke I heard lately was that basically Jesus walks up to Peter and he goes, Peter, guess what? And he goes, Satan came to me and said that he kind of wants to sift you like wheat. And of course, we don't see Peter really saying much in this. And we can kind of envision Peter coming back and saying to Jesus, well, you told him no, right? And Jesus comes back and says, and that's in the next verse here, in 32. Jesus' response is, but I have prayed for you, thee, that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. So basically, Jesus gave permission for Satan to sift. I think that happens. And so I know I've tried my life. It's always strengthen us. And that Satan is never allowed to do any more than Jesus will allow. So it's always for our, most of the times for our benefit, maybe sometimes for punishment. I sometimes wonder if some of the things I've had to deal with in my life may have been punishment for past deeds. Don't really know for sure. But I'm so thankful that, that God loved me so much that he wanted to correct me and to bring me back into the fold. And for me, that happened about 6 years ago, for sure, when I honestly had been kind of like a lukewarm Christian up to that point. And it, I was definitely a Laodicean. And God kind of pulled me back and kind of explained to me a little bit better exactly. He had work for me to do. And I think that's where I am today. So on to Revelation 12:10. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. So this is a part that he is finally out. It's like a celebration in heaven. I'm sure the angels were pretty tired of hearing Satan up there all the time complaining about this or that, trying to get have his way with us down here on earth. And it's finally, but I also see this as a time where that at this point in time I think is when pretty much we're going into the seal, the vial judgments. And I think that pretty much down on earth the only people left are Satan's minions, that at this point all of the saints that have been tribulation saints have been beheaded probably by now, that have not taken the mark of the beast, and that most other people have taken the mark of the beast, and they're going to go through a really bad time for the next few years. Not sure exactly how long or at what point we're at. We're somewhere around the midway point. And that it's going to get really bad. And then the Jewish converts, 144,000, have done their work, and they've brought and taken all the people that want to be, that recognize Jesus as the Messiah, and they've escaped out of Jerusalem and gone to Petra. Now, some of this is speculation on my point, but I think that this point in time is when pretty much anyone who is going to get protected is either dead already or is protected. And it's kind of like we've people have always commented, like as a example of the Noah's flood, is that those protected in Petra are kind of like the people in the ark. They're being protected from the wrath of God, which is a flood. Now the church is represented by Enoch, which was raptured prior to the flood, and then of course everyone that dies in the flood is all those who either weren't raptured or weren't protected. So it's kind of a prophecy is pattern to me. So that's a pattern. And if you look at same thing with Sodom and Gomorrah, is that anyone who was protected was taken out of Sodom before the God's wrath was rained down on Sodom. Matter of fact, there's one point where those two angels in Sodom had to make sure that Lot and his family was out of the city before they were allowed to do anything. So it's kind of like same idea, is that God won't produce any severe wrath until his chosen are protected. So I think at this point, we're pretty much moving into the bowl judgments, and there's not many people left on earth that are fellow believers, the tribulation saints, again, have already all been killed, and that the Jewish people are protected. So that's my take on this verse, and why there's no reason for Satan to be allowed in heaven anymore. There's no reason for him to be there. And so that verse 11. I hope that explanation made sense. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they lived not their lives unto their death. Again, basically that saying that that anyone who has found out who the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, they have loved not their lives unto death, which means that anyone up till now that has found Jesus Christ and accepted him is didn't look to try to save their life by taking the mark of the beast or doing anything along that lines. And now their souls are in heaven. Now they haven't been resurrected yet, and that'll happen, I believe, at the marriage supper of the Lamb portion, or right at the beginning of the millennium. Therefore rejoice ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you having great wrath, because he know that he hath but a short time. So this is, like I said, this is when it gets really, really bad. And when the dragon saw that he was cast under the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And again, this is kind of representing, again, that where the woman here is state of Israel. And so he's going to try to persecute. Let me bring my pictures back over. He painted a lot of pictures for a particular time frame. So we see that Satan is out of heaven. And we go to the next picture. And this is a picture of what I got next. We see Satan, the dragon over in the corner, and he is going to send a flood to try to, into the Petra area, to try to stop, try to kill the Jews as they flee. And that floods, whenever you see a flood, and I'll show you a couple of verses in the Bible, it usually represents armies. So that Satan is going to command an army, is going to send them after after the children of Israel. And I got a great example to share that is very similar. Again, prophecy is pattern. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth a man-child. So again, I'm just trying to represent that the woman they're talking about here is Israel, that originally brought forth the man-child, which is Jesus Christ. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, a times, and a half a time, from the face of the serpent. So again, this is where Israel, those that flee to Jerusalem, and are now being protected in the wilderness, they're going to be fed, just like the wilderness wanderings of Exodus, which we're going to review here in a minute. And the two wings is basically like God's protection. I remember when Jesus talked about protecting his flock by spreading his wings over them. So it's representative of the protection that God is going to have for the And also, I kind of believe that what's going to stop this armies is going to be something similar to what of to the verses I'm going to bring up here in a minute, but in this case, it's going to be like a big earthquake where the ground is going to open up, and that those armies are going to basically fall into it. Revelation 15:12-15, and the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away with the flood. So again, representative of armies. Now over in Matthew 24:15, talks about this. Again, I'm just reviewing the fact that Jesus also mentioned this. Wherefore ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, who read this understand. And them which should be in Judea flee into the mountains. And let him which is on the housetop not come down to take out anything out of his house. I know I'm going through it again. I already went through it once. I just did a little quick review there. So this happened another time in history. If you remember that when the children of Israel left Egypt, and they were heading towards the Promised Land, they got kind of stuck behind an area too, right there at the Red Sea, and God came in to help them again at that point. It reminds me so much of what's happening right here. So let me just review it. It's in Exodus 14:10, starting in verse 10. When Pharaoh drew nigh, and the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. In this case, too, that I believe that Israel also will be crying out to the Lord for protection, and that to realize who their Messiah is. And they said unto Moses, because there was no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt us with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Yet they're complaining already. If you remember that all through the Exodus journey, all these great miracles going on, and they still wanted to complain. Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? If it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians, then we should die in the wilderness. So again, they're still not trusting the Lord. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. This is where Moses, and Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. And we all love this particular. This is the famous parting of the Red Sea. But lift thy up thy rod, and stretch out thine hand over the sea, and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I beheld, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. And I will get my honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the dragon was wroth. So back to Revelation. So that's basically what's happening here also. Again, prophecy is pattern. So I think it's the same idea that the armies of Satan, or the Antichrist, are going to be going after these people fleeing into the wilderness. But God's going to send a supernatural event. I think this case, it might be an earthquake that will open up the ground and actually protect them permanently from the wrath of Satan from getting to them in Petra. A lot of people wonder why all of a sudden, for some particular reason, Satan has no power in Edom, which is where Petra is. And it was foretold way back in the Old Testament. I'll get that verse tomorrow that states that. But basically, I've been wondering why, and the only thing I can think of is that basically that there's no physical way that Satan is allowed in there anymore. Now, I did get some pictures of Petra. If you've never seen it, it's a really neat area. And this is a map. You can see Edom. This is modern-day Jordan. You can see in the map. And you can see that the bottom half of the Dead Sea is right there. You can see this little dot that says Petra in the middle. That's where Petra is. It's about 100 miles from Jerusalem. I have another map here, a little bit bigger one. Petra is down here where you see that number 1. And then where you see the number 4 up there. In Israel, that's Jerusalem. It's a good ways away. So when they're fleeing, I can envision that the Antichrist is going to find out about it before they get there. 100 miles, figuring they're going to be on foot. They might have vehicles of some sort, but I'm willing to bet not all of them. Or somehow God is going to fly them there. That might be very realistic when he said he's going to, on the wings of an eagle. So it is quite a ways. But somehow God is going to protect them all the way there, and and for some reason the Antichrist won't have power when they get there, but he's going to try. That's kind of what we see. So some pictures of Petra. This is one of the entrances into Petra. They call it the sheepfold. It's a very narrow entrance to even get in there, so it's very hard for armies to try to do anything in there anyways. It's pretty easy to protect it. Look behind this couple, they took these pictures, but that's a wide open area. Once you get through that rock area, this is a wide open area that's inside there. And here's some of the scenes that are in there, some rocks. These are some things that are cut out of the rock. They call this the treasury. Now, this is some kind of a temple. These are all places that are there now. They've been there for thousands of years. There's a general open area. Plenty of room for millions of people in this general area, but it's really neat that it's protected from the outside area. Now, overhead, of course not. You think in this day and age that you have bombs and you have all that kind of stuff, but for some reason, Antichrist is going to have no power there. But he might have a limited power to try to do something before they get there. And so that's where that verse kind of comes into play, I think. That he's going to give them wings to fly there, and that maybe they're going to be transported somehow by helicopters or something. We're talking about millions of people, possibly. So I don't know. That part is kind of vague. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We'll be with the Lord in heaven. I don't know how much we're going to want to watch this. Some of it's going to be hard to take, as our loved ones, some of our loved ones that didn't make it might be involved. But we'll see. So that's all I have for today. That ends chapter 12. Yeah, very fascinating chapter. And looking forward to continuing our study and revelation. We'll get into chapter 13 tomorrow. 13 is kind of talks about the Antichrist himself and the false prophet, and a little bit about those two characters. So we'll get into that tomorrow. And with a prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this time to look into your word. Just great, fascinating stuff to try to figure out exactly what John saw and what he wrote down in Revelation. I'm trying to envision how it plays out in this day and age, with all our modern technology.
Really fascinated to see how this is all going to play out, Lord. We know you got it all planned, and looking forward to seeing how this all unfolds. But in the meantime, Lord, help us to continue to reach those that need to know you, get to know you personally, and that you help us to find and seek out those individuals, and that will give you all the glory. In Jesus' precious name I pray. Amen. Okay, so I will talk to you again tomorrow, and we'll start on chapter 13. Have a great day.